You're listening to Classical 95.9, WCRI Block Island, Exeter, the classical station.
Welcome to Classical 95.9 WCRI's Conducting Conversations with your host, Mike Maino. 1 hour of music and conversation with notable people in the arts, bringing you the stories of how music has impacted their lives. The show will give a behind-the-scenes look at the guest's background, interests, or special project.
Conducting Conversations is brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, from sheet music and brand name instruments to rentals, repairs, lessons, and more. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.
And now here's your host, Mike Maino.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Conducting Conversations. Tonight, it is indeed a pleasure to welcome back to our studios in beautiful downtown Exeter, Rhode Island, the one and only, the world-famous Richard Sabellico is here. Welcome back, Richard.
Hello. Thank you for having me back here. It's been very difficult to get here. I'm so busy and so famous. You know, I managed to make time to come here.
Well, it is great that you managed to make time. If someone were to read your resume, they would find out that you are a very busy worker in the theater system. And now directing a show at Theater by the Sea. Annie is coming, and by the way, you're the director.
I am indeed the director.
See that? How does that work? How is it working so far?
It's working great.
It's going to open on Wednesday night for previews.
17th of July, correct.
All right, and then on Friday night will be the press night and the
correct.
Official opening. And it's been great anticipation of this, because I know that so far Theater by the Sea has had Nonsense and Cats, and a lot of people are interested and looking forward to, people I talk to anyway, about a little more of a traditional kind of theater presentation.
Well, Annie is nothing if not traditional. It is absolutely formula. It's got the right formula.
There you go. It's got the formula for it. It's you know, Cats is great, and I was talking to some friends of mine, and they appreciate what Cats is, and obviously very, very popular and lasted for a long time. But some people want the old singing and dancing and the story that they can follow very easily. And I think Annie probably has that, right?
Well, Annie has got great heart, and mm-hmm. it's got characters that you can invest time and your time in. And be quite satisfied at the end with the way it turns out.
Right. Now, let's get back to the famous Richard Sabellico part.
Yes,
I've known
subject.
You. Actually, I met you. I shouldn't say known you, because that's a little bit of a presumption. But I met you 20 years ago.
Correct.
And we did a national tour of Music Man that you were directing, and I was in, and I had a great time doing that, and you didn't fire me. I lasted the whole 6 months.
Amazing. Isn't that amazing?
And that was back in 1993. How long at that point had you been involved with Broadway and theater and that kind of stuff?
Oh, in 1993, I had my Equity card for 22 years, I believe.
Wow.
I had done my first Broadway show in 1973, so it was 20 years since I'd been in my first Broadway show.
Yeah, a Broadway show back in 1973 would be one that we would know of?
Well, maybe. It was a very interesting experience. I was hired as a replacement for a chorus man in a show called Seesaw, which mm-hmm. was a musical of the play Two for the Seesaw and the film with Shirley MacLaine and Robert Mitchum. Mm. And the show, when it opened, did not get great reviews, but actually had a terrific cult following and ran for quite a while and moved theaters. I'm going to tell you a lie. But it did move theaters, and it moved to a wonderful theater called the Mark Hellinger Theater. And this was in December of 73, and I was hired as a replacement. And was told I would probably have the job for about 2 months. And I had a week of rehearsal, so I started on a Tuesday with the dance captain, who happened to be at that time Bjork Lee, and this was pre-Chorus Line.
Hmm.
And on that Thursday, the closing notice went up. So and by Saturday, I was out of a job that I never actually performed.
Well, that was the beginning of a long line of shows that you've been involved with.
Yes.
And I know that you have some amazing credentials, too long to list here today, but we do want to talk about Annie and get all the details
sure.
of that coming to Theater by the Sea. and we'll give you details about how to get tickets and so forth. But like, let's get to some music. I guess right at the beginning of the show, there's a song called Maybe. What is that about?
It basically is setting the scene, as it were. It's the place song. It tells you who the leading character is and what's going on around her and what she hopes to accomplish by the end of the play, but what her journey is.
Okay.
It sort of maps out her journey. It's a very classic I Want song.
Richard, we talked about Annie being a little bit of a traditional kind of a lot of singing, some dancing, I presume.
Oh, yes. Very nice dancing.
And dancing and nice sets that are always famous for Theater by the Sea. And all of that is to be expected, along with a live orchestra.
Yes. I think there are 7 pieces. I'm not sure.
All right. But it's enough to make the music, right?
Oh, absolutely. A great sound and a great musical director.
And as far as the dancing, is it a kind of show, because I haven't seen Annie yet, so I'm looking forward to it, but is it the kind of show where there's a lot of dancing?
No, it's more, the dancing in the show is more character dancing. It comes out of the situations. There are no quote-unquote big dance numbers.
Okay.
There is a good deal of dancing, but it's all the kind of dancing, or mostly the kind of dancing that one would assume anybody could get up and do.
It's not
like Cat's Dancing where you have to... Since birth.
So I got a shot. I could.
Yes, maybe. You never know. You might want to just jump right up there.
Just to recall you back 20 years ago when we did Music Man together, one of my favorite things that happened was one of the first days of rehearsal, we had the choreographer telling us what to do. And myself,
I was the choreographer.
The assistant.
I told you what to do. I find that hard to believe. Go on.
Well, you notice that there's this quartet trying to do what you're telling all the professionals to do, and you said, "We'll just put you guys in the back." So we stayed in the back most of the time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, also the quartet wasn't—you weren't hired for your dancing.
That's correct. So that's the good news. But and Annie, the young lady that's playing that part, and she's. Is she on the stage most of the time?
Yes, she's in almost every scene. She is the absolute center pin of the production and the catalyst and the the person who basically wins everybody's heart in the audience, or and, at least hopefully wins everybody's heart in the
and
audience.
How old is she supposed to be?
She's supposed to be 11.
Okay.
And I think she is 11.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, she's diminutive. She's not. She's a very small 11.
All right.
And her sister is in it as well, playing the youngest orphan, who's supposed to be 6.
Mm-hmm.
Which you'll have no trouble believing, since also she is a diminutive 6.
All right. Well, there's a song called Tomorrow that's
right.
coming up next, which most people can probably know about, right?
Right. It's the obviously it was the biggest hit from the show, although the authors didn't expect that. They Charles Strauss, who wrote the music, told me this. Martin Charnin told me this separately, that they both expected maybe the song we just heard to be the big hit from the show. And that Tomorrow was basically just a paean to Annie's belief of the positive attitude that she attacks every situation with, and how she infects the rest of the cast with this. But it was a runaway hit. I mean, it just sold millions and millions of copies.
Sun'll come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be sun. Just thinking about tomorrow clears away the cobwebs and the sorrow till there's none. When I'm stuck with a day that's gray and lonely, I just stick out my chin and grin and say, oh, the sun'll come out tomorrow, so you gotta hang on till tomorrow. Come what may, tomorrow, tomorrow, I love ya, tomorrow, you're always a day away.
As we said, the most famous of the songs from Annie, and this next one is coming up before we take our break. It's The Hard Knocks Life. For someone who's not seen the show before, what is Hard Knocks Life about? Is it because they're orphans?
It's The Hard Knock Life.
Aha.
It's the orphans bemoaning their fate at having to be in this orphanage run by this heinous woman, and how they react to it, and how mm-hmm. they comment on the fact that this is their lot in life. And not only is it the depression, but they're in an orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not happy about it.
All right. Well, we'll listen to that, then take a short break and be back with more of Richard Sabelico and Annie at Theater by the Sea coming up next week.
Cotton blankets, set a hole, empty bellies. Claus, what's that? Who's he?
No one cares for you!
Welcome back to Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Maino. We're sitting with Richard Sabelico, who is the director of Annie at Bill Haney's Theater by the Sea, which is going to be running July 17th to August 10th. And then, just so you know, there's one show after that, La Cage, and that's going to be a great show to see also. It's a lot of fun. Richard, we talked a little bit about your background and theater over the last almost 40 years now, right? Do you get a pin for that or something?
One would think I would get more than a pin. It's basically you get a kick in the butt. But I've been 43 years.
43
since
years
done it professionally. Yep.
And you spend most of your time, is New York your home now?
Yeah, New York is my home base. I also do a lot of writing. I do a lot of teaching. I do a lot of show doctoring. I do a lot of stuff out of New York as well.
Out of New York City?
Yes, New York City. Manhattan
City.
Yes.
So you're one of those city people.
I was born and raised there.
Really?
Yep. Born on the Lower East Side, Little Italy. Or as my father would say, Little Italy.
Italy.
And then we moved to Queens. And then when I was 19 years old, I moved up to the Upper West Side after I got my Equate card.
Well, there you go. So Sabelico is not a stage name that you made up.
I know it sounds like it, but no, it's real.
It's the real
Hard
name.
Hard to believe.
Okay. There you go. All right. So you know, you fit in pretty good here in Rhode Island sometimes.
You got a pot at eight. Come on over here in Rhode Island.
Yeah,
beautiful.
You can go up to Federal Hill, have dinner and all that
go
stuff.
Go see my friend Buddy Cianci. Forget about it.
All right. Well, see, are you good friends with Buddy?
I've spent time in Buddy's company, but when I directed Annie 30 years ago, the first time at Theater by the Sea, mm-hmm. the first sanctioned professional production of Annie ever. I had just finished playing Rooster on Broadway, and the gentleman I cast to play Rooster here was big-time Theater by the Sea favorite, Gary Lynch.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And Gary's Irish only in the fact that his father's name is Lynch, but his mother's name is Cianci, maiden name is Cianci.
Right.
And they are so Italian, they make me seem like a wasp. And so Gary and I became fast friends, and I spent a lot of time with Gary and his family, and Buddy Cianci and the mother are first cousins.
Well, there you go. See that? So it's a little tie-in. So you have another tie-in to Rhode Island Radio.
See?
And I've...
Well, he was the mayor then.
Well, yeah, but now he's kind of like me. He's just a radio guy.
Just?
Anyway, it's a great tradition. We're talking about Annie. We're listening to some of the music from the show. We're going to listen to maybe about 50% of the music from the show, or thereabouts anyway, and so we'll touch on it. You won't get to hear everything. You have to buy a ticket to see everything and hear everything, and if you'd like to do that, you can do that by calling the box office at 401-782-TKTS, and for those of you that don't like those letters, it's 8587, so 782-8587. Or the easy way to do it is go to the website, theaterbythesea.com. Can't go wrong there. Or just walk up to the box office and visit the beautiful gardens and the beautiful surroundings of Theater by the Sea and get your tickets from Vinny. Hey, do you know Vinny yet?
I just met Vinny.
All right, see
beautiful.
Another Goomba. You know?
Goomba.
Let's go to this next song on the chronological list here. It's called Little Girls. What's this about?
Well, this is about Miss Hannigan, who runs the orphanage. Her frustration that her days and nights are spent with girls under the age of 12 for the most part, and the absolute frustration she feels at basically not having a life other than that.
Mm-hmm.
And It's a very, very, very well written, very funny song. It actually really informs you on who this woman is. I mean, she's not, you know, no one is just one thing and everybody says, oh, she's the mean lady of the orphanage. But, you know, there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And she's a good Irish Catholic girl who is lucky to have a job, but not so thrilled with the job she has.
Everything around me is little. If I wring little necks, surely I will get an acquittal. Some women are dripping with diamonds. Some women are dripping with pearls. Lucky me. Each little bloomer I'd have cracked years ago if it weren't for my sense of humor. Someday I'll step on their freckles. Some night I'll straighten their curls. Send the flood, send the flu, anything that you can do.
Going to go quickly to this next piece of music, which Richard told me off air. I was thinking it was called New York City, but it's actually NYC. And tell us about this one.
Well, it's Warbucks has just met Annie, and after getting over his initial disappointment that she's not a boy, and the fact that her innate charm is actually starting to melt his heart of steel, finds out that she's never really done anything. She's never been to the movies. She's never been around the city that she was born in. And he decides that she's going to have everything that she's missed in this one night. So he takes her on a tour of New York City that winds up in Times Square, where they're going to go to the Roxy, which at that time, for those of you who don't know what the Roxy is, was one of the biggest movie palaces in New York. On a par, they were the two of them, Radio City Music Hall and the Roxy, were the two places to be. And they were, at that time, both a block apart. But they tore the Roxy down in 1960, I believe.
All right, we will listen to NYC, then take a short break, and be back with more of Theater by the Sea's presentation of Annie and the director, Richard Sabellico.
NYC, what is it about you? You're big, you're loud, you're tough. NYC, I go years without you, then I can't get enough. Enough of cab drivers answering back in language far from pure. Enough of Frankfurters answering back. Brother, you know you're in NYC. Too busy, too crazy, too hot, too cold, too late. I'm sold again on NYC. Mayor 5'2". No other town in the whole 48 can half compare to you. Oh,
NYC!
You make them all postcards. You crowd, you cramp. You're still the champ. Amen for NYC. Shimmer of Times Square, the pulse,
the beat,
the drive. You might say that I'm square, but damn, I come alive. The city's bright as a penny arcade. It blinks, it tilts, it rings.
Back on Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, sitting and talking with Richard Sabellico, who is directing Annie at Bill Haney's Theater by the Sea, which is going to be July 17th to August 10th. So previews open on Wednesday night, and then the show officially opens on Friday night. And things are always, I'm sure, a little hectic and compressed in summer stock theater. Is that different than a normal Broadway show where you have...
Oh, as far as a Broadway show is concerned, absolutely. I mean, Broadway shows rehearse for 4 or 5 weeks, sometimes even 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I think Warhorse rehearsed for 3 months.
Wow.
But usually, the standard summer stock rehearsal schedule is 2 weeks rehearsal, a half a week of tech, and then you start previews at the end of the week like we have, like we are.
Right.
But I do a lot of work at the Pittsburgh Civic Light Opera, where you have 6 days of rehearsal.
Wow.
A five-hour tech, and then you open.
Now, one of the things that some people might not understand, if you're someone listening to the show and you have not yet been to Theater by the Sea, you should definitely do that. It's a great place. It's a very intimate theater. It's a lot of fun. It's beautiful gardens and surroundings. There's a restaurant there. It has a lot of nice things attached to go along with it, as well as the shows. But I was thinking about the theater itself, and does the size of the theater put restrictions on you that you're not used to, or
to a degree? I mean, not seriously. Mm-hmm. It has incredible depth. So sometimes what you lose in width and the width of the proscenium, which, you know, is what the show fits in between, you can make up sometimes in depth by moving the actors upstage and starting doing interesting patterns. I mean, it's a problem, and I know it was a problem in shows like A Chorus Line, which has to have, 16 people
dancing
across the front of the stage at one time. I mean, in a line, and you can't fit 16 people across the front of that stage, not even squeezed.
Right.
So I know they had to make adjustments for that. But Theater by the Sea is an incredible place. It is, in the true sense of the word, one of the few theaters in the country that is the essence of what summer stock theater is. I believe this is its 80th year in existence.
Correct,
And as I said, I came here for the first time 30 years ago and fell in love with it. And at that time, it was run by Tommy Brent, who was quite the impresario, quite the character, and just an absolute fan of mine, and vice versa. And also Bill Hanney, who owns the theater, he and Tommy were great buds at the time, and he came to the theater a lot. Then it was taken over by Laura Harris, who I believe family owned the land that it was on.
Right,
I guess they owned the theater.
Yeah, the physical building.
Yeah, the physical building. And she formed a corporation with three of her friends called FourQuest.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, they ran it. And as a result of The Music Man I did, your production of The Music Man emerged because it was such a huge hit that summer.
Right.
That, as I was telling the associate producer of Theater by the Sea, Kevin, there were lines outside the box office waiting for cancellations. I never believed that. I mean, I was watching it and I couldn't believe it. And then I think people just lost interest. I know Richard and Laura separated and they lost interest. And the theater just went away. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the happiest days of my life when I heard that a gentleman named Bill Hanney was going to be buying the theater and reopening it.
Right. That was about 7 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago.
I guess. So, I'm not sure when it was.
So it's been doing great and continues to do well. So we encourage you to get out and see this. It's an amazing place. And one of the misconceptions sometimes about some summer stock theaters is this is a professional theater.
Yes,
we're dealing
absolutely.
with Richard Sabellico, who is a very professional director, and lots of professional actors, equity actors, and so forth.
Yes.
So this is not community theater. We don't
right, and it's not only anyone. Me. I mean, Richard Stafford, who did Cats, was the dance captain of the Broadway company and is a highly respected professional director, as is Michael Lichtenfeld, who's choreographing La Cage, who I adore, and Charlie Repley.
Right, and before that, Dan Goggin was here.
Oh, yeah, of course, Danny.
Created
he
Nonsense.
He is Nonsense.
Right, 30 years ago. So so it's a very, very, very well-done thing. You won't see anything better anywhere. This is Broadway in Rhode Island. This is
Broadway at the Beach, I think, is what
Broadway
they
at
used
the beach.
To call
like
it
that.
Back in the day.
I like that. All right, let's go to another piece of music from Annie. This is another popular one that probably a lot of people know. I think it's an easy one to hum the melody to. It's called Easy Street.
Well, Easy Street is easily the most important number in the show, sung by the most important character in the show, more important than Annie, Brewster Hannigan. I think it's a part I played. I'm not quite sure on the Broadway.
It's like the bass is the best part of a quartet.
Rooster is the villain, and it is such a perfectly written script that the way that the plot is laid out is you fall in love with the kid, then you find her adversary who you can't help, you know, one of those people you love to hate. Then you meet Grace Farrell, who's like a fairy princess, and then you meet Warbucks, and you're absolutely in love, and you're rooting for this kid, and then they bring on the villains.
Okay.
And Rooster is Miss Hannigan's kid brother, who is can't get out of his own way. And he's always in trouble, and he's always coming, you know, trying to figure out some scheme on how to get rich quick. And you're basically just introduced to him, and you see the germ of the idea that perhaps there is something that they can work, some kind of a deal where Annie can lead them to Warbucks' money. They don't know what it is yet, but somehow, some way, they are going to figure this out. And once they do figure it out, that's where they're going to be living, on Easy Street.
I remember the way our sainted mother would sit and croon us her lullaby.
She'd say, kids, there's a place that's like no other. You gotta get there before you die.
You don't get there by playing from the rule book.
Oh, no. You stack the aces.
You load the dice.
Mother dear, oh, we know you're down there listening. How can we follow your sweet advice? She gets Warbucks.
Ooh, the little brat. It ain't fair. This here life is driving me nuts. While we get peanuts, she's living fat.
Maybe she holds the key, that little lady,
to getting more bucks
instead of less. Maybe we fix the game with something shady.
Rooster.
Where does that put us?
Give you one guess.
Yes! Easy Street! Easy Street! And it's a key, yes, every, yes, every, yes, every.
You have Easy Street, and this next tune is called Something's Missing. What does that take us to?
Well, this is at the end of the first act. There's one scene after Easy Street, one scene left where Warbucks decides he's going to adopt Annie. Mm-hmm. But we don't, he doesn't really come out and say it, but the first step towards that is he's going to buy her a new locket. She wears a locket that was left by her parents, which is her whole raison d'etre. It's what she, what keeps her going, that the parents left half of a locket with her and they kept the other half, and that when they have this other half, they're going to bring it to her and all will be well and she'll live happily ever after. And so he wants to buy her a brand new locket from Tiffany's. And when he goes to take it off of her, she breaks down and spills the beans as to what's going on. And she, as much as she appreciates Warbucks and everything he's done for her, what she really wants is her parents. And he pulls out all the stops to try to find her parents. And he can't. Nobody can. And it's a very humanizing moment for Warbucks, because it's the first time he realizes he's found something that money can't buy, but and loses that sense of his omnipotent qualities, but realizes what he's won in trade in on that is the love of this little girl. And that's when he asks her, when he says to her, "I want to adopt you." And then he explains to her why. And that even though he has all of these riches and how he has built a wall around himself, a fortress, and kept himself above it and beyond anything in life, that this little girl broke through it and humanized him for the first time since he was 10 years old. And it's basically him telling her that.
I've made me a fortune, that fortune made 10. Been headlined and profiled again and again. But something was missing, I never quite knew. That something was someone, but who? My speeches are greeted with thunderous acclaim at two universities bearing my name. Yet something was missing each time I got through. That something was someone, but who? How could she make it known? Who would need me for me? Need me for me alone? The world was my oyster, but where was the pearl? Who dreamed I could find it in one little girl? Yes, something was missing, but dreams can come true. That something is no but you. Dreamed I would find it in one little girl. Yes, something was missing, but dreams do come true. That something is no
Richard, during the last commercial break, we talked off air about the fact that I believe that everyone should listen to someone like you or a program with you in it describing the show, because it adds so much. You get the now I'm really anxious to see the program because I know what's going on. I have an idea. I have an indication.
Character development. Well, what it is audiences have become so distant from the theater because of television. and their attention span, and this is not to put anybody down, I'm just as bad. We have an attention span of 15 minutes now, and then we go to the refrigerator. So my job as a director in the theater is to create a product that is going to keep the audience riveted to their seat for the time we need them there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I work it like a magic act where I allow them to pull away and then I figure a way to get them right back again. And I let them relax, and maybe in their mind they need to go to the refrigerator, but then I get them right back. And it's something that all audiences need, all people need. It's why we can, the live theater continues, is actors, the people in Annie, people in Lacage, the people in Cats or anywhere else, are dream makers. We make people's dreams come true. We can take somebody who's just sitting in an audience and for 2 hours put them on a journey that they would never experience in their life, ever.
Mm-hmm.
But the only way you can do it is if you tell the truth, if you infuse the characters with such gravitas that the audience sits there and goes, I know these people, I love these people, I believe these people, take me anywhere.
Sure.
And you do that by making encouraging the actors to make very specific choices that are based on a reality, that are not based on getting a laugh or the piece of business we did on Broadway, or I did this before in a show and it works. I'm not saying we don't put that kind of stuff in, but it has to come out of the truth. And it goes back to that old adage, which I think is from the Bible, not that I quote from the Bible often, but, tell the truth and the truth will set you free. You tell the truth on stage and the truth sets the audience free to experience anything and everything that they can, which is why shows like The Music Man and My Fair Lady, where their characters take us on journeys that are just extraordinarily wonderful journeys with people who don't start off where they end up.
Right.
They go on a journey and we go with them. And the more the actors can be detectives of the human spirit and understand humanity, the better the product is going to be. And that's like, for instance, one of the things I do with Annie, and I do it with most shows, is I spend the first week basically putting the show on its feet, throwing all the physical blocking and dance numbers on them, so that this second week, the first couple of days of the second week, we're going to a table and we're just going to read the scenes and play opposite a table where we don't have any blocking or any of that stuff to get to the truth of who these people are, and then go back on our feet so that we can take the emotion and the physical and put them together and give a terrific performance.
This is what it's all about. This is amazing. And a director is not just someone that says, stand here and get under the light.
Well, yes, that's absolutely true. But unfortunately, a lot of critics, including New York Times critics, not Frank Rich, he's one of the few critics I've ever read where I thought he actually knows what a director does. But right. Other critics, sometimes I get the impression they think the actors come in and do it all, and the director just says, yes, no, okay, stand there. That's a good idea. Let's go home.
This is you could not only be a Broadway director, you could be a motivational speaker. You could be that's the kind of thing where you have to reach these people to get them to get the best out of themselves.
They're paying a good deal of money. Granted, they're not paying the money they're paying on Broadway, but a lot of times for people who don't live in New York and don't make the money that people who live in New York make, it's the same thing.
Sure.
They're relative. $60 they're paying at Theater by the Sea is the equivalent to $120, $150 that people in New York are paying. And you've got to give them the same product.
Right.
And a lot of times I will alienate sometimes producers, sometimes technical directors, because I demand that people do every single show that I do as if it's going to Broadway. I direct it as if it's going to Broadway.
Right.
I never do it like, oh, who cares? It's summer stock. I can't operate that way. And unfortunately, everybody doesn't want to go to that place.
Well,
but I'll drag him kicking and screaming.
I appreciate your explanation and all of the time you spent with us today. We've gone a little long, but we're going to just go over time because I think everything you've said is very important. And we have a short tune to go out on, which everyone will know about. But before we do that, and I ask Richard to introduce that, I just want to give the phone number for Bill Haney's Theater by the Sea. And it's 401-782-TKTS. Or 8587, or go to theaterbythesea.com to get tickets. plenty of tickets still available here and there for Annie, and then for Lacage coming up after that. So, Richard, thank you so much for coming in today.
You're welcome.
It's been a pleasure. And we've had a pretty silent peanut gallery. Kevin's just been sitting here listening to us. But,
well, I don't like him to talk.
Yeah, we don't let. He's just an associate.
I've actually had his voice box removed.
Okay. Well, we're going to get to this last piece and tell us. It's a title song, right?
It's the title song, and it's once again perfectly constructed that it's the adoption, the song that we just heard, Something Was Missing, leads into an adoption proceedings, and this is the whole staff getting ready, and everybody's gearing up to make Annie part of the family, and that's what this song is, and then right at the end of it, in come Rooster and Lily, throwing a big pail of cold water on the celebration.
All right, we'll listen to Annie, the title song, and then we'll see you all next week on Conducting Conversations.
Annie, 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 everything's humming now. Annie, 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 good times are coming now.
Conducting Conversations was brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, using music and the arts to keep your child educated, entertained, and having fun. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.